Okay, I think we're about ready to begin.
That was dramatic.
I got your pencils and paper for those that still have them.
I know, right? Oh, it's funny because Rox, I forget who it was. Somebody was like, oh, I really liked how Rox did the introduction last time. It sounded like an airplane announcer.
Okay.
I was like, well, so I'm not really an airplane announcer. I don't have that much.
I know.
I'm not sure.
Everything, whenever I do those things, it sounds like, you know, an ad for a Zeppelin Emporium or something.
All right. So, welcome one and all to this, the third episode of The Grew Cafe, the needcoffee.com podcast that's all about gaming and related activities. Joining us today in the cafe, besides me, your host, Kim, we have Rox of Spaz House.
Hello, all.
And our European correspondent, Dom.
Hi.
Yay. So, we are also joined today by Flamingo Doc Ezra.
Dom, first, please say V-Gates for us.
V-Gates.
There you go. Our international spot.
Indeed.
What would your answer be? Because it means, how are you?
Oh, my God. I forgot. But, Ich weiß nicht.
Very good. I mean, it's an answer.
It is.
I took French. I don't know.
We got points for that.
You are like Lee to be eaten. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group.
All right, Kim, sorry.
That's all right. It wouldn't be a Need Coffee podcast if we didn't wander a little bit.
Okay.
But we're going to try to keep this one relatively around an hour because I want to go to the quilt store this afternoon and they close at 6.
Ooh, okay. On we go.
Onward. So we first off, we just wanted to say everyone that saw us at Dragon Con, thank you for paying attention to us. We're attention whores and we always appreciate it. I think the Fun Fest was very fun. We had a lot of good panels. We got to see a lot of you. There was Mousetrap and or Operation Gaming.
It was mainly Operation. Yes.
Which much thanks to our special guest, Peter Apollonius, who provided us with wonderful things. And there are even a couple of pictures in my Flickr feed, which is oblique red. And I have a lot of Dragon Con pictures. And I still have all the pictures I took on Saturday that I haven't had time to upload yet. Because I seriously took like 800 at one panel. And I haven't had time to go through and get out the good ones.
What panel?
At the quiz show.
Oh, okay.
Whenever somebody looked like they were about to do something interesting, I would put it on the little drive. So it would take a whole bunch in a row. Hoping that I would catch at least one of those where, like, their eyes were open and they looked like they weren't a fiend.
Yeah, Misty
I literally
Lee.
Just listened to you say that, tell that story on Weekend Justice, so.
Oh, that's right, I did. We don't even remember anymore.
But yeah, as far as
with the precise same words, so.
You know,
we don't want people to know I'm a robot.
I know. Actually, we should make that a pre-panel show thing, is you can follow Peter. He could be the official Operation Game keeper, so that if they're standing in line, there could be a convention of nothing but, you know.
Famous board games of your childhood. Relive
them. No, I think just Operation would be fun because a lot of people actually like that.
Yeah.
So you could play a couple hands or a couple of, you know, operational.
You can take a turn.
Things,
yeah.
You know, before a panel starts. So yes. I think that'll be fun.
So gaming highlights, gaming moments of Dragon Con. Rox, what was your favorite gaming-related thing at Dragon Con that you saw or did? And besides Operation and Mousetrap, which, of course, were the coolest.
Oh, yeah. Ken Plume took away our Mousetrap game. I was hoping
at least
he
would
set
that up. Later.
But, you know, he made me come to the front of the class and
aww.
The teacher. Actually, I did take a turn at the gaming area, like, early in the morning, and somebody did have the ice castles out, so I was able to play mining for a little bit, and I borrowed somebody's deck for Magic, so that was the extent, because, as you know, I did, like, 10 hours of panels this time around, so my gaming was kind of on the sly side, but I did make sure I stopped in to see what was going on, and there were a little people in the gaming area. So, a friend of ours went to Dragon Con, his girlfriend, and he went, and he did go for some gaming. Apparently, he dropped out of one game because he didn't like the way the person was running it.
Was it a post-apocalyptic furry?
No, I don't even know if it was. He's a big Star Wars miniature fan, so I don't even know if it was. If it was that.
I have a crap load of Star Wars miniatures because I really want to play the D20 RPG. And I cannot find anyone that will play it with me.
We're starting that in a couple weeks.
I really want to play it. I think it looks like fun. And they've discontinued it now. So I should probably get some of the books.
I'll tell you what. I'll record our sessions. And you can live vicariously.
Because yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. Well, because when I was younger, I loved the Star Wars like extended universe. I had all the books, and you know, I used to like that. And I actually did on this is how long ago this was on AOL.
Wow.
I did like online kind of Star Wars RPG stuff, and I had like this little character who was like a traveling intergalactic kind of junk dealer.
Oh, like she rounded up stuff. You were Mrs. Haney of the Star Wars universe.
I like rounded up stuff and kind of, fixed it up and sold. Like I kind of an engineer with secondhand stuff. But of course, I was secretly a spy.
Wow. I wish you would have rather been like Mrs. Haney from Green Acres. That would have been great. I think.
But it was really fun, was my point.
I think I'm going to do that now.
Because the thing about the big space universes is you can do all plot line that doesn't involve the main events at all.
Oh, no.
Which I think is more fun than trying to shoehorn in like, oh, I want to be Han Solo. No, I want to be Han Solo, you know.
And you know what? I think that's where the online role-playing kind of does not work because they try to shoehorn that in.
Right. I just want that universe with those mechanics in place. And, like, the different cultures. And just, you know, be turned loose. Like, I used to, you know, make up these epic stories about me and my best friend and our special, you know, spaceship in the Star Trek universe. And we didn't ever encounter Starfleet. We just had our little, you know, we told each other stories about all the different things that we would do in space.
What's your ship's name?
What was it called?
Shame on you.
It was...
No,
it was the something redemption, I think. I can't remember what the first word was. We had this whole backstory for it. Like the captain had some sort of a shady past.
You know what? I even came up with two names for two runabouts, and that was the Shenango and the Susquehanna. Okay?
The Shenanigans and the what?
No, the Shenango and the Susquehanna. They're two rivers that converge in
Indian
the
names,
town.
Right?
In the city, yeah, they're Indian names. In the city that I grew up in Binghamton.
That's cool.
New York.
Yes. Yeah, well, I will actually.
I
will actually confess something now. Maybe I shouldn't do this, but my screen name Oblique Red is actually based in part on that made up Star Trek universe that me and my best friend did like ages and ages ago.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Because the ship was the Oblique Redemption. That's what it was. I had even forgotten
yourself.
I named myself after my pretend ship. I had forgotten that until just now.
Wow, Kim.
Oh, good times.
Yeah.
I'm like bright red now. I'm blushing at my youthful silliness.
So did you walk by the gaming area at all?
I actually didn't even make it to the gaming area, although I did do a good deal of shopping.
Oh my
because
god!
I did two panels last year, and then I did eight this year, and I would have done another one, except I had a family issue at the end, and I had to duck out.
I know.
But yeah, but I was really
okay. You need for the notes for today's game, for today's podcast, you need to get Peter to send you the photo of your bag of monster dice.
Oh my goodness. Yes. So my gaming group gave me some money and said, be our personal shopper at Dragon Con. Get us some. And I was like, well, do you want props? Do you want dice? Do you want minis? They said, give it about half and half minis and dice. So I went to the ChessX booth and I got the scoop of dice. I got the pitcher. And so
that's a dangerous for you.
Oh yeah. It was so beautiful just looking at the bag. And it was funny, last night we were playing and every time someone was like, this die isn't working, we were like, here, try another.
So how many pounds did you get?
It's probably about 6 pounds.
Holy crap.
It's a lot of dice.
I don't even have that.
I mean, it's the dice group
by the
dice.
Pound would have been my death back in the day, because whenever I went to one of the shops, for us it was the comic book shop, who always had role-playing stuff as well, I always bought dice when I didn't buy anything else.
I know, it's so easy to say, oh, this one's so cool, I'll just get this one. Yeah, I have a lot of dice. And the thing, everybody laughs because my dice are all mainly blue and green and pink and purple and glittery or sparkly or kind of clear and glowing. Like, they're all the kind of really fancy girly ones. And then Toffley's dice are all black and white with a little bit of red here and there. So it's like,
mine are small. You can't read the numbers. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Well, that's sneaky.
All I'm saying.
First D20 has unreadable numbers. They were originally golden, and then they just faded away, which is actually pretty handy.
Oh, look, 20 again. Which I'm actually thinking, Rox, of adopting your technique of having a cheater die and letting somebody use it the next session if they did really well role-playing in the previous
one. Oh, yeah.
I think that's a really cool idea.
When you could reward people for playing in a session really well.
Yeah.
And
I felt bad because they had a tough time. We'll talk about that in a minute because my guys had a tough time last night. But yeah, so I had fun at the ChessX booth. I managed to limit myself to only about $30 worth of dice for my personal use.
For your personal
use? For my personal use.
All right. How much for the group?
Well, actually, that was in the pitcher. So that was, I think, $42 for the big pitcher. But the dice I got were, like, they were either the new release colors or the colors that were limited edition that you can only get at cons because they never release them for general use.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, and I got a really cool die. It's a 12-sided die, but it only has the numbers 1 through 4 on it in Roman numerals 3 times. So it's like my new favorite D4. Because it's super fun.
We were talking the other day that since you're so close to the Walk of Fame, and I don't know if I Twittered this to you, but we were saying, you know, now Dom, do you know about like Dice Mojo? Like, you, if you have a bad die, you set it aside and use something else.
Of course.
Well, we thought it would be great if you went through the Walk of Fame and had celebrities touch your die. But then you'd have to get picky. Then you would have to get picky of who deserves what die that they should touch. Like, we said Kevin Sorbo would be a D4. Here you go. Can you touch this? Please?
Well, no. Sure, for Kevin Sorbo, you should give him like a D12 for those really big, like barbarian only giant weapons.
No, that would be Lou.
Oh, is it true? You could have more than one. Or you could just find some people who are generally cool and be like, will you just hold your hands over this bag? They might think that was kind of weird.
Yeah, it would be. It would be.
Although they are a dragon.
Depending on whom you're asking, yeah.
What you do is you find the celebrities who play D&D.
I think Dana Snyder would put them in his pockets.
Let them get warm and then give them back.
Yeah, here you go.
Ah, Dana. But yeah, so I got the dice, and then I actually was too late because Troll and Toad had sold out of D&D minis by Saturday afternoon.
Oh my God,
insanely.
Really?
Like, they had this big box of HeroClix, and I was like, do you have this for D&D? Because they did last year. They're like, yeah, we're sold out. They're all gone.
Wow.
So I actually had to go back home and order everything for the minis, mail order. But it was exciting because we're playing this adventure. I think I mentioned that Lee's husband wrote, and it's really good. We're really enjoying it. It's a teleportation tower, and there's all these little teleport pads that put you from room to room.
Now, you're not playing Eberron, right?
No. I would like to play Eberron because I bought the Eberron Adventure to play with my brother and sister, and I really liked that campaign setting. I thought it was really cool. So I'm thinking about maybe doing something in Eberron with my main group at some point, but this one is an original one, and each of the rooms is different. Like, we've had a room that had kind of nesting things, and we've had a room that had orcs, and we've had a room that was like a fire room, and it was all like magma creatures and magma in the floor. And then we had a room that was all like war forged. So the rooms are kind of themed, but it's really cool because it gives you a lot of variety in the play.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually got minis for all of the rest of the encounters in that adventure, like everything that the group had not played through yet. So it was really fun because last night I got to kind of reveal them as they went to the different rooms.
Oh, that's cool.
And I found some really cool minis too. So I'm excited.
Now, but your group wasn't rolling well, so you made...
Oh, my goodness. I felt so bad. So, I could not have a bad roll last night. Like, I think I rolled... I had a couple low ones, but I hit, like, three natural 20s.
Oh!
I had a whole bunch of, like, 18s and 19s and 17s. And I was rolling really high on the damage dice, too. Like, I was getting... you know, eights on D8s, or, you know, I was really rolling well. Like, never do I roll that well when I'm playing. I was so mad. I'm like, why couldn't have I had this luck when I was actually playing my rogue, you know?
And what level is everyone?
Four. It's their fourth level.
All right.
And this adventure takes them through the whole fourth level. Basically, when they're done, they should be five.
Oh, okay.
So, because we played Keep on the Shadowfell at first, and it just took forever because we only meet, like, once every 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
So we did this one is a little shorter, so it'll just be one level. But oh my gosh, and they were having trouble because the two rooms we did, one of them had rock spikers, flame spikers, and magma hurlers, and a geonid, which was awesome because I was like, the room is full of boulders. They're like, okay, boulders. And then when they finally got next to the one that was alive, it's like, the boulder is alive and it tries to eat you. And they're like, oh shit, they're everywhere.
How can we get this?
It was great because only one of them was actually alive, but they didn't know that because none of them had high enough perception to tell.
Oh, I hate that. That's, yeah.
Can we tell if any of the other ones are alive? And I'm like, nope, you can't tell.
Oh. Have you guys ever picked up a used campaign by somebody else? Like a book with a companion in terms of where they had notes in it?
Ooh, no.
Oh, I have years ago. I have years ago, and that's kind of interesting and fun because the DM will write they'll have a campaign and then they'll write these side notes and see on how they, and this guy really, he killed people.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing, you know, to build a group, but he wanted to destroy people. And
see,
he would write these notes
like, kill
too bad, they so-and-so is dead, roll up new character.
Oh no.
You know, I mean, he would say stuff like that. We're talking about something along that line. And
excuse me, you were picking up rocks, so I didn't really get the question.
Oh well, that was my thing. You know, I did play part of it, but I didn't really go by his notes. I kind of help people along,
just funny because I don't use prepared adventures. I always like make up my own.
Mm-hmm.
But when I browse through them, there were sometimes notes like, please, 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 your skill in swimming is too low, like a comment for the whole group. Because one part where nobody had that skill on a high enough level to really survive.
Oh, yeah.
So the dungeon master had to really force them or help them in some way to get through it.
Oh,
and
I
could just read the frustration out of that comment. It was kind of
that's
nice.
That's funny.
And
we had a thing where...
As far as modules, I never... On a whole, I never really... I use those as, like, outlines.
Yeah,
and
of course.
I'm kind of like a free gamer type, you know, it's like, oh, if they get to the end thing, okay, that's fine. Everything else, because everybody, I mean, I gamed where it's like, oh, you know, we're not going to go to the gladiatorial games. We're going to go here. We're going to go back outside and shop. And it's weird. You get a game master that would like corral you into doing that. I never did that with my people. So,
well, it goes back to my very, very first gaming session. Three people, two players, and the game master. And we all played for the first time, or the second time for the others. For me, it was the first time. And at one point, both the players, we decided, well, we're going to go that way because we're not achieving anything here. And he's like, well, then I have to improvise. And we're like, okay, we're going back. It's okay. Oh. Because he was really peeing his pants when he realized we weren't going that route.
Well, it's tough, especially when you're new. I think the more you run games, the more you get the ability to kind of think on your feet. The very first game I ever tried to run was for my brother and my sister. And I had written an adventure for them because I was trying to customize something that would be playable for only two characters. You know, I think they were a fighter and a cleric. So I had to make something that would be usable because all the published ones. Hello? Are you there?
And you were saying.
Hey! Are you here?
I'm not sure.
You both just dropped off the face of the earth.
Okay.
All right. So, okay. Okay, so. Wow, that was unsettling.
So I have no idea what's going on.
I don't know. Skype is being weird. Because I had both of you, and then Rox went away. Rox? Hello?
Hello?
Okay, we're having difficulties. Let me try to do a conference call again because y'all keep falling off.
Hello?
Hello? Are we all back?
That sounds better.
I think so.
That was scary.
It must be halftime and everyone was getting to the internet.
To the internet.
This one's going to take a lot of editing. All righty. So, I was saying my first game, I had made this adventure and they were supposed to go to the inn and meet this woman who was traveling with her child and her guard and agree to take a job to escort them to her husband's house. And on the way, they were going to be attacked by bandits. So they get into the inn and they see the woman and the child go upstairs. And my brother goes, can we go upstairs and kidnap the kid and hold him for ransom? And I was like, no, don't do that. Why would you do that? Fortunately, Tuffley was in the room and he goes, he's like, the barkeeper is a level 40 wizard and he doesn't like it when people do stuff like that in his inn. I'm like, yes, what he said. Thank you.
That's funny.
But it was good for me because now I'm like, okay, how is my brother going to come up with something completely off the wall to divert me? So, but yeah, it can be a terrible sensation when you're like,
oh, it is. And I learned like years ago in my teens, and I was running a game for my sister and some of our friends. So it was all girls. Okay, now you're talking the early days of D&D when you had alignments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, you guys are in like an African veld and a rhino starts stampeding. And my sister's like, no, it doesn't. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, well, we're good. And the rhino is neutral and he wouldn't attack good people. And she was doing this throughout the entire game. I'm So I'm like, okay, whatever. So I learned early on that, you know, it's not that important.
Yeah, you have to kind of learn to roll with the punches, but I think the more you do it, the more you're able to kind of think of something to do real quick.
I don't know. Some people don't get out of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've even seen older gamers that still do that, and that's why I don't play in the games. So,
you know what I do? I do actually think is handy for that is there's a book called Dungeon Delves.
Yeah.
And that has basically a little dungeon delve adventure with like two or three encounters in it for each level from like 1 to 30. So it's a nice thing to have with you because if they're like, yeah, we're not going to go into the Tower of Fate, we're going to go in the woods. You can be like, okay, take out book, flip through to their level. All right. Well, in the woods, you find a crypt.
Oh, when I was playing Call of Cthulhu not too long ago, I could just point to something. You fall down the stairs. Chandelier falls on you. Make a dodge roll.
Yeah. Seriously, partway into the game last night, they were like, is this going to be a rocks fall, everybody dies moment? Like, I don't intend it to be. But it was just the luck of the dice. I was getting good rolls. They were getting bad rolls. And the problem was that they were in fairly challenging encounters where they had to be getting decent rolls to hit because the enemies had pretty high armor. Mm-hmm. And so, like, they were hitting with reflex-based attacks and will-based attacks.
Oh.
But not so much with the AC attacks. So the melee people were having trouble. And we had this party. It's a bard, a paladin, a warlock, and a ranger. So
no cleric?
There's Holy no crap. Cleric. There's no rogue. There's no fighter. There's, you know. Oh, and we had a wizard that was an extra character. The player of the paladin was running the wizard and the paladin. To give
and
them
the
a little
bard
better
only
chance.
Has so many healing.
Yeah, so the paladin has a little bit of healing and the bard has a little bit of healing. So they've been being kind of the healers, but it's tough cuz they'll get tapped out. We carry a lot of healing potions at this party.
Oh, we don't.
But it was funny cuz we had this incident where we had a room, they came in on one side of the room. And there's this chasm in the middle with a bridge that you can extend with a lever, but it takes a full turn, a full round of combat. Like, it doesn't finish till the end of that character's next turn to extend over a 20-foot chasm. And on the other side, there was this resounder character, a magic user, who was behind a wall that gave him cover. And he had all these attacks thunder attacks that would hit them and push them. So if you get close to him, he tries to push you into the chasm. And he started out with an attack, which was his encounter power that they didn't realize, which basically knocked 5 of them prone and gave them like 15 damage because I could not roll badly to save my life that night, you know.
And 15 he had all damage and they're only 4th level. Holy crap.
Yeah, damn. It was tough. Like his main attack did 2d8 plus 4 damage and pushed them 2 squares. Wow. Like his at will attack. He was a tough guy. And so for some reason, the guy running the wizard decided to teleport the wizard over the chasm to get him closer to the caster, who then promptly knocked him out with his big attack. And so he's over there dying, and the bridge takes a full turn to extend. And I'm like, so now he's unconscious over there by himself, and the bridge is not extended. Oh, so I'm like, does someone want to try to take a running jump and jump it? To go heal him?
A 20-foot chasm? No. I have a rogue character.
It was only it was 20 foot deep. It was only 10 feet wide. So I think the paladin was able to clear it. He had good athletics, but it was funny. I'm like, why did you do that? I think he's used to running a melee character, so he's like, I need to get closer. Yes. Yeah. But I was like,
point,
okay.
I'm wondering if you've read my email, because I've never, ever played D&D.
Oh.
Play thousands of hours of RPGs, but no D&D so far.
Well, then let's switch. So I have vented
no, it's
how
no problem. I understand everything.
Yes, I have vented my my guilt because I felt bad. I don't want to kill people. I feel invested in their success as a DM. I want them to do well.
It's a good segue of learning how to problem solve.
This is true. This is true. So we were actually having an interesting conversation in our kind of pre-talk about perception of computer games, especially Dom, you've seen this in Germany, but I know we have this periodically in America too, with someone will get it into their head that, especially first-person shooters or other quote-unquote violent video games, that may, you know, they think they make people kill. So let's pick that up, because I think that would be an interesting conversation for our listeners.
Well, the difference between Germany and America is already, before you look at computer games, I think you know this, that America is a little bit more prude about sex.
Oh, very true.
When it comes to movies and entertainment. And Germany is that way about violence in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You've both seen Sideways, I think, the movie.
Yes. Uh-huh.
It's rated R in the US, I think, because it has a nude scene and five times they say fuck or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's free for kids starting at the age of 6 in Germany. And there is a, there's a sex scene and somebody's running naked to a car in it. So, I mean, the fuck all the language stuff, that goes out of the window because of translation, but
yeah,
the nude scenes are still in there. So it would never be, would never get that rating in the US, even with a different language. And it's the other way around with violence. And that's pretty, pretty tough. There are a lot of movies that only exist here in edited versions. I think a lot of movies that you know and have watched when you're 16 were on an index here, so nobody could see them for a while. That has changed a little bit.
Huh.
And with computer games, it's a lot tougher still because it's interactive.
Right.
And especially the first-person shooters, they call them killer games. That's their word for them. Their word meaning the critics. They have a word for it. And especially when an election is coming up, they will say something like, well, we need a law against them. We need to law them out. And
well, they tried doing that.
Rox and then Dom.
Oh, I was going to say, our you know, Tipper Gore tried doing that.
I think every once in a while we'll get somebody who makes it a big deal, and it'll be a big deal for a while, and then as soon as they sort of lose interest, it'll fade back down.
Right.
Like there's always the sort of whenever any teenager commits a crime, the press is always going to go, "Oh, they played video games," because here's a newsflash: pretty much every teenager in the U.S. plays video games.
Oh yeah.
It would be more surprising if they didn't.
But when you consider for years, getting back to even before video games, people would say, oh, they play D&D. I'm not kidding.
Which, now that I play
they
D&D.
They listen to metal.
How completely.
Yes.
I'm like, this is like the least threatening activity I can imagine. Maybe it might tend to make you fat or something because you're sitting around eating Cheetos, but or pizza. We always have pizza and like a veggie tray.
Well, that's good.
Veggie tray is good. But
I remember when I was back in school, we actually have one time we had to watch a documentary in which they said, actually it was an American one, where they said, well, kids who play D&D and watch He-Man, Masters of the Universe, tend to become Satanists.
Oh, I know. I wasn't allowed to watch He-Man when I was a kid because of that. Although, randomly, I was allowed to watch She-Ra. I don't know if the Satanism is less threatening if it's a lady or what, but
it's a good role model.
Kind of amused by that.
So first-person shooters in Germany, do they put on an extra rating? And I know like tax laws are different in other countries. Do they add like a violence tax or something?
No, there is no tax, but there are pretty strict ratings. And many publishers will edit their games, even when it's like real-time, like Command and Conquer never had red blood in the German edition. It was always green, and they said were cyborg soldiers.
Oh. And that's like the first Mortal Kombat when they released it here on Nintendo. They had to palette swap it to be kind of gray, and they said it was sweat.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. I remember when I was in like high school or middle school when that was happening. That was a big deal on the playground, was Mortal Kombat.
I love Mortal Kombat. And I shouldn't have played it at that age, but it didn't hurt me at all.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny when you consider Germany And when you think, I mean, that to me is a major area where you get a lot of import of metal and death metal, you know, even though I would say it's almost the same. You know, I don't see, you know, in Germany being that violent now, or is there a lot of crime that people would come up and say, we need laws against this?
There were a few events, a lot of like 5 school shootings in the last 10 years. And whenever those happened, there were, of course, well, the kids, of course, played first person shooters, but they were all troubled kids. And yeah, they didn't only do that. The last big one, it was interesting because the kid was, before that, there are shooting clubs in here where you do it as a sport.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. And his father did that and had the weapon unlocked in his home.
Oh,
and the
God.
Kid had shown years before that signs of depression. But they were all shouting, well, the computer games, you know.
Yeah, not those easy access to loaded guns or anything might have a thing. That actually is reminding me of a study. I forget who did it, but they did a study about rates of violent crime on the night that big like slasher films would open, because there was this whole thing that violent media made people more likely to commit violence. And they discovered that in most major cities, the rates of violent crime actually dipped those days.
Well, that's because they were
because
the film.
Yeah, because the theory was, well, people who enjoy the violent entertainment, who maybe are violent, more violent people who like to commit crime, well, they were busy. They were at the movies that day.
Right.
So they weren't,
now,
you know, mugging anybody.
Now, just
which is, so it's like the circular thing, you know, is it that violent people like violent entertainment and then also lots of non-violent people do, you know?
I don't know. But I do know, and we could...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like, first-person shooters and the whole thing like that. If we hearken to the article that from the New York Times about video games and learning... In the article, they said women that played like Call of Duty and first-person shooters, their ability to problem solve in a spatial way increased.
Oh, yeah, that was really interesting. And men didn't get the same benefit.
No.
And also, a challenging 3D puzzle game that was not violent did not offer the same advantages.
No.
Which, because I imagine if it's tapping into that sort of monkey brain that you have where you're really feeling threatened in some level.
Exactly.
So you feel more likely. Because I know, here's my brief talk about first-person shooters. I never played first-person shooters or first-person games at all because, A, I would get lost. Like, I would get turned around and not be able to tell where I was, and then somebody would come up behind me and kill me. I was really bad at it. And they sort of made me dizzy. Like, I really had trouble with the first-person 3D games for a while. And then, also, I don't like games that don't have much of a story. I'm very picky
right.
about that. I prefer RPG-type games. But I started to play Fallout 3 because, honestly, I was wooed by their art design. Like, with all the packaging and the... It was so clever with, you know, Vault Boy and the little sort of pseudo-50s stuff. I was like, I really want to play this. I've heard nothing but good things about it. And the packaging's so cool. Let me give it a try. And so I played that for a while, and it got me kind of accustomed to the first-person thing, but you had the sort of guided shots, so you didn't have to aim. And then I played Mass Effect, which is you have to aim a little bit more, but it's still an RPG. And I had played all of those for so long, I'm like, maybe I'm ready to play Bioshock. Because I had heard it was so good, and I really wanted to play it. But the first time I had tried, I had died really, really quickly and badly. Because I kept startling at the sounds and trying to shoot them, so I lost all my ammo. So when I got to a turret, I had to try to run up on it and beat it with a wrench. That didn't work really well. So I started a new game of Bioshock. And I'm actually much better now. Like, I'm actually doing fine. So I was kind of proud of myself. I'm like, look, honey, I'm not dying this time. He's like, that's nice, dear.
You know, I bet a lot of people, sociologists really don't take into that account that we are hardwired for, you know, ancestral, you know, that whole flee and run.
Right, yeah.
Flee and, or fight.
Yeah, and I will say, I find myself, when I'm playing Bioshock, I'm tense. Like, I'm frightened. You know, like, I have that sort of physiological arousal of there is a threat to me here.
Right.
You know, so I can totally believe that I would be, you know, my brain would be susceptible to must find new problem solving approach to help me not get killed by the splicer, you know, because it does such a good job of kind of immersing you in the world that you really do feel like you're being threatened. You know, like, oh, God, I don't want to go out of the bathysphere. I want to go back upstairs to the plane crash. I felt better there. And we laugh because the main guy who's kind of guiding you through Bioshock has an Irish accent. So I was playing in the first level and I was telling Mike, I don't want to go to the medical wing. I want to go back. And he goes, don't worry, honey. Aaron Poole is there to show you the way home.
He should get credit for that.
I know. Because he does actually sound a little bit like Aaron. He has a similar accent to Aaron's accent. But yeah. So now that eased the tension a little bit. But yes, I'm not done with Bioshock yet, but I've really been enjoying it.
Well, that's cool.
So
this article in the New York Times, it's in the today's magazine.
It's in the magazine section, yeah. And I thought that was really interesting. Roxy, you want to give a little summary of the article or the main points?
Yeah, the article deals with a school called The Quest for Learning.
Hello? Rox? Where'd you go?
The Bill and Melinda Gates.
Hey, can you go back? Because I suddenly could not hear you guys for a couple seconds. So, Quest for Learning School.
Oh, okay. It's a Quest for Learning School is a school in New York City. It is, I believe, like a satellite type school that the kids. It's all for sixth graders, and eventually they'll grow to incorporate different levels, right. You know, different grades.
Which let me just tell you, I would have loved to have gone to that school.
It's great because not only are they doing game theory, they're using a lot of paper and pencil.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches a lot about problem solving right. That I swear to God, there are a lot of people out there that just do not know how to problem solve simple stuff.
Yeah, if they can't find the exact answer for their precise problem. It's like they don't know what to do next.
No.
You know, they don't know how to look for related things or go through steps.
It's sort of funny. It's like a 9-page article. It's really good. They talk about like Sandra Day O'Connor, the former Supreme Court Justice, that she's video game. Doing web-based games, and she came up with this one.
iCivics, isn't it?
iCivics.org, yeah. And I'll tell you, I got on this morning because we actually played several of the games, and I think a lot of people should play this game because one was how bills are passed. I mean, yeah, you have your
Schoolhouse Rock
classes, Schoolhouse Rock. But the thing is they're very boring, you know, in school. I remember that's like, here is the executive branch. Here's the legislative. You play all three. You play executive, legislative, and judicial. This is one part of this website. There's like several games.
And, I think it's the thing about games as a learning tool that's really compelling is that to play a game, you're really having to deduce the rules of the world and figure out how to use them to your advantage. I mean, it's a very high-level cognition task.
Well, yeah, that's what one guy said is aim.
Hello?
To decipher how you will problem solve.
Right.
And that just is not taught. And I was noticing
you don't learn
today,
that in traditional school at all. You have to kind of either figure it out yourself, or sometimes in college you'll start to get some of it. But kids can do that. You know,
well, these classes are cool because you have in regular school, you have, okay, here's your math class. That's all you do. You just do math. Whereas in game theory and game design is you have to incorporate design, grammar, math, spatial thinking, which is not taught,
yeah,
and a whole list of other problem-solving issues that's just never, ever taught. And a lot of these kids, yes, a lot of them do get, you know, some of the kids in it are like the typical gang kids.
Mm-hmm.
That, but I can see if they offered a subclass or, a, you know, into schools, I think this will be beneficial.
Oh yeah, because it's a fun thing, but it has a genuine thing behind it, a real value in learning.
Yes.
Yeah, because yes, you know, when you're a kid, like all the educational games you have, like we had Math Blaster and Oregon Trail, and we had this one we played in French class called Ticket to Paris. That was like you had to decipher the little French phrases to get to the train station on time and stuff like that. But they were very kind of transparent, like, right, excuses.
Well, yeah,
whereas some of the better kind of pedagogical games now, they have the learning really incorporated into the game design in such a way so that it's almost invisible learning.
Well, yes and no. I mean, part of the article did say that, yes, you... Or some people in the after section of the article, people could write in comments.
Yeah.
And they were saying, and this goes back to, you know, not paying teachers enough.
Yeah.
It's like, get Madden, get paid. You still have these wonky games. It's
yeah,
like the Ice Civics game. Yay. But once you start getting into, like, oh my God, because it's a really cool, the one about the judicial powers and the executive powers is really cool because you're trying to pass a bill, but you're supposed to also make sure that your people, like your legislative branch, that they're electable again.
Uh-huh.
So you're like, you're always having to think, oh, I can't do this because my constituents...
Well, the constituents will be angry and... Then you'll lose your people. Are you guys
here?
Is she
here? There for you still? I'm here.
Yeah. Rox?
Yes. Well, I hear you.
We're having a lot of... I'm having a lot of trouble with Skype today. I am sorry, guys.
It's not your fault.
I keep losing one or the other of you.
So,
it's so sad.
What is... I mean, I'm sure that your area does have, like, some sort of, you know, computer gaming for children. Does anything like pop out, you know, of teachers using them in the computers in the schools?
We have computers in schools, but I don't think that any of our teachers has yet approached teaching through gaming. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe plays something that I'm aware of. But to realize that the education system in Germany is entirely different than the one in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have only very few products, and it's pretty tough to get new developments into the state schools. So that will take a while. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yes. No. My question is how strict... For classes is German schools, because you hear on how, you know, European schools outrank U.S. schools.
What do you mean by strict in this case?
Do you mean like academically rigorous?
Yes.
I think it's really the problem is that it is very, very different right now, or when I grew up at least. After elementary school, you're about 10, 11 years old, and then you have to make a choice between two, maybe three types of school right after that.
Oh.
And the highest form of school, which actually has the name of your gyms, Gymnasium, which is the same word pretty much.
Hello?
The last 2 years of my school, I went there regarding math were pretty intense, and you would never ever need that in a normal working class life what we did there. And then there is university and a type of specialized university after that, so it's They select a little bit tougher, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So you really start to specialize much younger.
Big discussion about Asian philosophy. Yeah.
So you really start to specialize a lot younger than we do.
You were gone for me for a few seconds again.
Yeah. I was saying you in Germany, you start to specialize in your education much younger than we tend to, because generally until we get to our high school, which is about ninth grade for us, is you have a choice kind of between either college prep or non-college prep. But that's usually as far as it goes. Sometimes you'll have the like gifted classes. But still, you're generally all in the same schools and share at least some classes together.
Yeah, that's actually something they want to get rid of. They want to have learning together for a longer time now.
Mm-hmm.
To really be sure that they separate the right ones to the right schools later on.
Right. Well, because, gee, I changed my major in college. I didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, so I can see how that could be a concern. So, Rox, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah. I don't trust Skype.
I don't have anything to interject.
So,
well, I mean, part of the gaming really kind of go hand in hand, because you're at an age, if you weren't playing, you know, checkers, chess,
mm-hmm.
you know, now you have video games.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, for children, as their brains are developing and they're learning about the world, I don't think that, especially for very young kids, like everything is sort of like a video game to them, because it's like, where am I? What am I supposed to do? What happens if I push this? You know? And so I think it's a very similar sort of process. You know, it's natural for humans to try to explore the boundaries of the place they're in. And it's fun to be able to meet a challenge, because I mean, even just in our game last night, it was so hard and people almost died a couple of times, but whenever somebody got killed, the whole table cheered, you know, which was kind of fun. You know, it's like, yes, we killed one. Yay. So it really is kind of cool. All right. So I think let's go into our final segment, and we may have to talk about this some more on a later date when we have a better Skype connection. But just a little quick run on notable gaming news, new releases, and or.
Hi.
Hey.
Stupid Skype.
I know. It's never been this bad. Rox? She's ringing.
Everybody's watching porn.
Everybody's back now.
I'm watching porn, I swear to God.
She needs everybody else. They're just cluttering up our bandwidth.
I think so.
All right, so let's go into recommendations. I can recommend on Doc's behalf Halo Reach, because that's probably where he is now. He's probably playing instead of talking to us. The Doc Flamingo says Halo Reach, which was just released this week and is set to break lots of purchase records, I understand.
Now, are you going to get that?
No. I haven't played any of the other Halo games. I'm not a big shooter person. I really love BioShock because of the story and the art design and stuff like that. But I don't like the shooter for the sake of shooter. Like, I like the RPGs.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I mean, I may at some point look at it, but I've got so many other things in the queue. I need to finish BioShock. I need to finish Lego Harry Potter. I need to finish Final Fantasy XIII. I have a bunch of things.
Okay.
I tend to play so long that I don't, like, I miss stuff because I'm still, you know, trying to get 100% completion on, you know, whatever massive game.
Okay.
But
Flamingo says Halo.
Flamingo says Halo Reach. All right. Dom, you have any recommendations for anything people should try?
Thing, but the only thing I have been playing the last few months was StarCraft II, which everybody has already.
Hello? Hello? I see your little thing moving, but I don't hear anything. Hello? Hello?
Long time no talk.
I know! This is awful. So, okay. Real quick. StarCraft 2.
Yeah, I can recommend it, but I know everybody bought it already. So,
Well, I haven't bought it yet, so, you know. I recommended BioShock on Weekend Justice like 2 weeks ago, and it came out in 2007, so Hey, Rox.
It's a plague of ticks. You want to try it again?
Yeah.
All right.
Just stay on and it'll transfer you real quick.
Okay.
Hey.
Hello.
I found a Rox.
The top of the next podcast already.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to have to like edit the hell out of this thing, or I may just leave it all in and they can listen to our travails. I haven't decided yet.
Yeah. See how hard it is.
See how hard we podcast. Try.
I recommend that Skype really becomes a better program.
Hey.
Oh my god, yeah.
That'll do it. I'm afraid it may be my fault. I don't know.
Oh. No, not this time. So you were saying StarCraft?
StarCraft 2.
StarCraft 2. Yeah. I recommend it and I will recommend it again. It's a nice game.
Yay. Okay. All right, Rox, what do you recommend? I'm trying to get it done really quick before it falls off again.
I know. For gaming, that web civics
iCivics.org, was that it? Hello? Rox? I can't hear you anymore.
Just of the way
okay,
civics
I haven't
are.
Heard you for like the last 30 seconds. So you were saying iCivics. Hello?
Hear that. Did you hear that?
No.
No. All right. iCivics.org.
Play it.
It's San Diego. Play it.
Okay.
And pick up I have a book, Fantasy Freaks and Gaming. Ethan will show to you. But who starts.
What's the name of the book again?
It's his story.
Okay, I didn't hear any of that.
Okay.
Okay, quick, say the name.
Fantasy Freaks. Did you get that?
Why don't you put it to me in the chat and I'll read it out since I'm recording here. Cause seriously, every time you start to say the title, your voice drops out. Damn you, Skype.
Okay. Alright.
So Rox is recommending a book that the title is a mystery.
Game Freaks. There you go.
Okay.
It's the other way around.
Fantasy Geeks and Gaming Freaks by Ethan Gilsdorf. That is the book that Rox recommends. Other way. Gaming Freaks and Fantasy Geeks? Anyway, it's some book title that has components of the phrase Fantasy Geeks and the phrase Gaming Freaks. And it's by Ethan Gilsdorf. And Rox says you should read it. Oh, God. This is insane. I'm going to try to get Dom back. Oh, my Lord. Crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so while Dom is trying to get back in, my recommendation is for... The new Professor Layton game just came out. I was very excited. Professor Layton and the Unwound Future. The third in the series for the Nintendo DS. I have not gotten very far into it yet because I just got it like 2 days ago. But I will say, if you liked the first two, get this one. You'll like it as well. And also Lego Harry Potter. I recommended that on Week in Justice. And also, if you have a Windows machine... Civilization 5 is already out. If you have a Mac, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer for it to come out for the Mac. Hexes.
So did you make it through the second one, Dr. Layton game?
The Pandora's Box or Diabolical Box? Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
I really like these games. Cool. I think they're fun.
Cool. I pick them up and put them down.
Yeah, well, you can do that. You know, they're good for that. And also, I think that the little animation style is very charming.
Ooh, I do need to say, Fantasy Flight has announced Mansions of Madness in their Arkham horror series.
Ooh.
That'll be...
Hello? That'll
it's a
be...
cooperative game.
Okay.
And it's a whopping $80.
All I heard was the title,
don't
and then
cry.
He said, that'll be,
that's
and then
okay.
It went away.
That's
but
okay.
Buy it, guys,
okay, so...
if you want it, it'll be good.
Yeah.
Now, is it a computer game or a board game? I didn't really get that.
It's a board game.
Okay.
Board game.
But why would you need anything else but Call of Cthulhu?
want to know.
Just if you're not insane enough.
Right. So should we call it so Kim can go quilting?
I think we need to call it because, dear Lord, Skype is against
roll
us
for
today.
Sanity.
Yeah.
I know.
No, I think the anti-gaming lobby is trying to keep us from getting the truth out about violent video games.
Kicks him off.
No, it's like...
all right, well, this has been...
It's football.
Yeah, and porn. This has been your third episode of The Crew Cafe. Many thanks to Rox, Doc Ezra Flamingo, and Dom for participating in the call today. And
Or something.
And no thanks at all to Skype for being terrible and cutting us off about 15,000 times. But you'll see what I'm able to make of this. It may be 30 minutes long by the time I'm done editing. But we will definitely get this out sometime soon this week. And Dom, we'd love to talk to you again, hopefully someday when the internet is more cooperative and we can actually explore these issues at greater length. But this has been really fun, guys. Thank you so much for being patient with the crazy. Which really isn't that need coffee all over. Needcoffee.com, patient with the crazy. So, goodbye!
Into the slavering fangs of a lurking grue.
Did they all fall off already? Guys? This is Kim from needcoffee.com. You've been listening to the needcoffee.com podcast, The Grue Cafe. If you enjoyed The Grue Cafe and would like to hear more, you can make that happen by doing one, or even better, all of the following. Number one, tell a friend about us. Number two, go to iTunes and write a review of needcoffee.com podcasts. Number three, become a member of needcoffee.com. Our goal is to become the world's first 100% reader-supported website named needcoffee.com. For more information, please go to needcoffee.com/membership. Thanks for listening.
John Hamm was on Fresh Air.
Yeah, I heard that. Could Terry Gross have been salivating any more obviously?
Oh my God, yeah.
She was like, I'm like, are you doodling Mr. and Mrs. Hamm like on your reporter's notepad right now?
Like, she was talking about the 30 Rock episode. You can imagine her thinking, I could have been Tina Fey and I could have done that. Yeah.
It's so fun. Mike and I, we were in the car. We were like, oh my gosh, put it away, Terry Crews.
We're talking about Mad Men, and then there's a NPR radio show, Dom, called Fresh Air. And the host is kind of galvanizing. You either like her or you hate her because of her style.
She has a very, let's say, distinct interview style.
Yeah, it sort of borderlines on,
you know, when you go to a con
intrusive.
And there's Q&A with the audience, and there's always that one person who obviously knows every detail of the guest's life and is going to ask them embarrassingly detailed questions that relate back to their own personal life experiences in some way, and they keep going on and on and on in the lead up to the question, and you just want them to spit it out already so you can ask yours. That's Terry Gross. She's always like, when I was young, I had an experience, so did something like that, you know, contribute to how you play your character? I find it very annoying because I'm like, I don't want to hear you. I want to hear them. But the thing is, she gets really interesting people on the show. So you kind of find yourself compelled to listen anyway because you want to hear what they have to say. But the whole time you're sitting there seething with annoyance at Terry Gross.
Yeah.
But I've heard people who are like expats talk about, oh man, I miss Fresh Air. I want to hear Terry Gross. You know, I'm like, really? I'll call you on your phone and annoy you.
Well, I think if you like her, then it's a perfect program for you. You get to listen to her and the stories of her guests.
This is true.
Well, the thing is, she does put her guests at ease because they are not in the studio with her.
Yeah,
NPR actually goes to their studio with the case of Iggy Pop, which I think was funny because he was being interviewed by her, and he was moving stuff around, and she's like, and she doesn't edit anything.
And she's cool, like, actually,
well, you know, you hear a drop and a smash, and she's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, I'm just moving stuff around." So in a way, she, you know, it's like a phone conversation. Jean Renault, the actress, Kim, I thought that was a really good one.
I don't think I heard that one.
That was really good. That was maybe like 2 years ago or a year ago. And she actually's like, yes, this was just like a conversation. Which, some people like that and some don't.
I don't mind conversational. You know? It's just when she starts monopolizing the conversation, it starts to get kind of annoying to me. I'm like...
And personally, I don't like that guy. The guy that sits...
Oh, like her substitute guy?
Yeah, I don't like him at all. He's boring. It's like, oh, it's got him. He's worse. Because he does the typical, you know... Which is weird. Like I said, she's very galvanizing. You either hate her, but you like parts.
I'll be back in a second, okay?
Okay. He's like, oh, God.
I know.
I thought you were going to talk about gaming.
I'm not, and I can still hear you. So.
Hey, he's lucky. He's on the one podcast on Need Coffee that's mostly women.
No.
It's a more civilized discourse. We like to let people think.
Yeah.